You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
I'm very excited about the conversation we're going to have this hour. I think art matters hugely in the society, and that's because art can be a mirror that is held up to us, and we can look at it and see what we are getting on with or not in society. Artists can also be very critical and incisive. They can offend, they can move, they can do all sorts of things. They can also sometimes be used for jingoistic purposes. Think back, for example, to the darkest decades of Russia in the last century. We have these majestic symphonies, and you often have composers being told, your funding from the state is conditional on coming up not with melancholic sounds, but stuff that will whip up nationalistic fervor. You can also look more closely to what happens in our neighboring country in Zim, where that is also often the case. So for the next hour, I want us to have a discussion, a debate about art and public discourse. But what triggered this particular topic on the part of my producers, my house been passionate about it, myself, I've also been very passionate about it, and Olaze has been putting it together for us over the last couple of days, is in particular the idea of offensive art, art that offends. And obviously it's very subjective what offends, right? Because we have different sensibilities. Some art is now regarded as just vulgar. Let me give you a couple of the examples that I have in mind. What's been in the news, as many of you will have known, for example, in the last week or three, and in fact we had a massive debate about this last year on the open line, is a F-U-C-K white people exhibition currently on exhibit at the National Gallery in Cape Town, the work of Dean Hutton. And their work have caused incredible consternation amongst people who find it not just offensive, but the word vulgar has been bandied about in describing it. A lot of people feel the same about Ayanda Mabulu's work as well, that it is offensive, but not just offensive, but also quite vulgar. So there's a range of questions. I don't have any answers on them. I just find these questions really, really fascinating, intellectually exciting. I find them aesthetically interesting, and I hope that you will as well. I know my guests definitely do, and they've written about it. They've thought about these questions. So, you know, broadly speaking, what do you make of art in public discourse in South Africa? Does certain kind of art forms or particular artists or their work offend you? And do you think that's much of a muchness, that you don't have an entitlement to not be offended? And when it comes to the idea of vulgarity, are there certain people, certain kinds of speech forms in the way in which we debate social and political issues in South Africa that you regard as vulgar? So let's throw it open. Those are the range of questions we want to puzzle through, and the lines will be open throughout. 011-883-0702, that's our number in Johannesburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. We've got two guests. One is stuck somewhere on Greyston Drive. That is Percy Mabandu. A lot of you will know his work. One of the country's best journalists, a beautiful writer, pun intended. And here in the studio as well, another is Lwandile Fikeni, who of course last year had the Ruth First Fellowship and in part meditated on some of the issues that intersect with today's questions. He's an essayist, an art critic, and hopefully in the next year or two we'll also have a novel that might actually land if he gets through that structured program. Lwandile, thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me, Eusebius.
Obviously, we want to talk about art, and, you know, I mean, you're the expert on these issues more than me. So, you know, don't wait for me to prompt you. Let's just see where we run with this conversation. I just have one or two prompting questions up front just to make sure that you know, sort of clear your throat a little bit. The idea of vulgarity, maybe we should start there before we even look at art. What comes up for you when someone even refers to an artwork or someone as vulgar? Have you thought much about the idea of vulgarity? We've had, for example, someone like Lumka Oliphant last week, Monday, on this particular show. Some people defended her defense of her minister. Other people say, not necessarily on air, but certainly off air, many people say to me, she's a vulgar woman. You know, there's a lot of like views around vulgarity that seems to be floating around.
I like this idea of vulgarity, which has sort of taken prominence since at least the past 3 years with the students' protest, who are very expressive, some might even say vulgar. And what's interesting for me is that actually the word itself, vulgus, which is Latin for common people, right? It speaks to sort of the lower levels of society, and of course, by its very nature, because it's a speech of the common people, it will be vulgar to the elite, to those in sort of middle class kind of sensibilities, kind of what I call polite society. But vulgar, like you said, it is subjective, and it depends where that vulgarity comes from. For example, you've had the spear, right, which I think happened in 2013, which wasn't seen by the same people who might find Dean Hutton's work as vulgar, right? Because then it was not attacking them and their sort of their place in society.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, there's vulgarity is set up against the sensibilities of polite society.
Yes.
But then you're throwing in there also the idea that polite society can also be very hypocritical about when they apply this concept.
Exactly. Exactly.
First, let me bring you in there. I don't know how much you heard of the framing conversation. We're not yet talking specifically about art, but obviously we're shooting the breeze.
Yeah.
And I know that you want to get into the first question, which is just around vulgarity in general. And I've been trolling you on Facebook, yeah. And I know that you've been interested in how even someone like, say, Lunka is suddenly deemed to be a vulgar person. Let's unpack the idea of vulgarity a little
bit. Yeah, for me...
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks. It's lovely to be here. And I see you've got my comrade here, which is good. I'm not alone. But yeah, I mean, my sense is that the use of language... You know, language is used to express particular emotions or particular outrages or particular ideas, and that vulgarity, like an embrace, are equally part of the same language, right? So that we employ different aspects of language to express different parts of the ideas in discourse, right? So when I'm angry at you, I will say certain things that will express exactly what I want to say to you, what I want to express, so that the value that we tend to give on different parts of language is what I'm fascinated by. That somehow we accept that when you're happy you're going to laugh, but yet we don't accept that when you're angry you're going to sue.
Let's take a specific example from language, right? And I can't believe my cowardice for spelling it out rather than saying it. You swore in your lecture, or you used a swearing word. Some people regarded that as a vulgar moment in the performance of your Ruth First lecture last year.
Yes.
And of course, Dean Hutton, also they use the word F-U-C-K, which I'll be taken to the Broadcasting and Plays Commission if I actually had to perform it on air.
Yeah.
Why is it that swearing, and swear words in particular, tend to rub people the wrong way up?
Which is funny, because we watch people being shot, you know, point blank in the head every day on TV, right? We see the most gruesome types of performative violence, as it were. In the news, black bodies are strewn all over when you're looking at reports on the Congo, when you're looking at reports in the Middle East wars, you know, black bodies are, you know, treated, as far as visual language is concerned, in the most heinous and vulgarous, you know, sense. And yet we didn't see the same, you know, in 9/11. In fact, a decision was made that it was in bad taste to show, you know, all those 3,000 or more bodies that came down falling and dying there. So there is this double standard, you know, as my comrade says. But I think the issue that I find very interesting is this value. Also, that
okay. So there's hypocrisy. Yeah. That's one element to it.
Or racism,
expletives, particularly. Yeah. Like the F bomb. Why does it land so jarringly?
It depends who's actually using it. We've had, like you were saying, when you look at like racism in South Africa, who's been called a monkey and all the sort of things.
Yeah.
It depends on who is saying it. If somebody who's in power is swearing at you, your role is to be submissive and to accept it. Yeah. But when you swear back at them, then you break that relationship between the two of you. You break the power dynamics. You take something back, you know, something of you back to yourself. You arm yourself, you know.
Yeah.
So swearing is itself not merely like sort of innocent, like we can swear at each other as friends.
It's the ultimate, rebellion, I suppose. You know, you're basically, opting out of the power structure, you know, imposed by a particular conversation. You know, when you swear, you're basically short-circuiting the whole thing and saying, you know, I opt out of submission to this conversation as is, because it's structured in such a way that I'm disempowered. I cannot go on, you know, whatever. So
is that for you, Percy, a speech act that you regard as not only legitimate, but also a valid form of speaking back?
It's very important, it's very necessary, in fact, that we recognize it as equally as we recognize smiling or an embrace.
You look too polite to swear. Yeah.
Well, I often never get a chance to, let me put it this way.
Yeah, let's take a bit of a break.
But I'm hood.
Okay, 18 minutes after 10, we're talking about vulgarity or the idea of vulgarity and offensive art, so related in public discourse. Do you get easily offended? What kinds of language offends you? What kind of speech act, because it's not just about language, offends you? We'll take a bit of a break, then we'll take your calls on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. I'm joined in the studio by Percy Mabandu, who's of course a well-known arts writer and journalist, and also SAS and art critic Lwandile Fikeni. But I want to put you at the center of this conversation. We're going to move specifically into art next. But I suppose in some ways we're running two conversations interrelated, unpacking vulgarity and talking about art that offends and its place in public discourse. Makara says on Twitter, "I honestly love art, Eusebius, that is provocative and which offends. What offends us says a lot about us rather than the artist." And I find that quite interesting. Mzwaka Boy says, "Eusebius, is your guest comparing swearing in public to people jumping out of the Twin Towers during 9/11? Not sure to see where that question comes from. Business,
yeah,
no.
I'm not the mouth for his ears.
But you know, that is the interesting thing, is how people want to choose the form in which they want to be engaged on social and political issues. And that I find quite interesting. And that's where a lot of that polite society norms that you're talking about, Lwandile, comes through, is that we've been schooled in certain forms of discourse. You keep quiet, you don't interrupt, you don't get awkward. And I find that quite interesting. And that has been the dominant mode of what has been regarded as acceptable.
Yeah, but also, I mean, these sort of standards are put in place by people who are beneficiaries of that system in a lot of ways, right? Those who benefit from the power that it confers, or, you know, that it produces.
But so, also there's the TRC hangover.
Yeah, right. But I mean, in the larger, I was talking just in theoretic terms. I mean, you can take it to the particular context of the TRC. But I'm interested in how, for instance, when the status quo and what it deems nice and polite, you know, benefits you, you find it. You always can't understand why people are protesting.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
why are they not at work?
I think it was Zanele Moholi's work, 2009. She's showing, I think, I'm not sure of the name of the exhibition, but it was at the Constitution Hill.
When the minister walked out.
When the minister walked out. I think that was the first time for me, the idea of vulgarity in art, right? Yeah. I mean, what was she offended by, right? Yeah. Two black, queer, lesbian women embracing, right? And she walked out and she said it was disrespectful. I think she went as far as calling it vulgar, actually.
Because there were few artworks there that were dealing with violence against women and all of those things, and also dealing with ideas of queer love and whatnot. I know Nandi Pamdambo had The Rape of Europa, also, you know, showing this. So there was all these, you know, all these artworks that I suppose the minister could not deal with in, with their Christian sensibility.
And it seems to me in that case that when people, they also use the word vulgar as a trump to not have to justify their own aesthetic and their own ethical beliefs that they have, right? And so there you have the minister. She's obviously offended by a combination of same-sex love and nudity. And instead of owning that and trying to make a case for why that constitutes acceptable standards of decency, she just uses the trump of saying this is vulgar. Because vulgar, when you call someone vulgar or you say this artwork is vulgar,
you deny
it's
voice.
A way of stopping aesthetic engagement.
And we have a history of these, at least, you know, I mean, with the speaker in parliament, Balakambete, and the ashtray artwork, I think in the early 90s when she was Minister of Arts and Culture herself. So we've had these sort of tendencies where people are trying to silence the artwork and what it takes us to, or where it takes us to, you know, so they close the possibility of that conversation that the artwork demands of us to have by just, you know, calling it vulgar or unacceptable or whatever. So we never then go there to the sort of the higher ethical call that it demands, you know, of us. And okay, I think that is the ultimate loss, or the greater loss.
Let's take a couple of calls, guys. Some of the listeners want to weigh in conversation. Also on Twitter, you're more than welcome to tweet me. Aubrey Machikli tweets, politicians, Eusebius, subject us to vulgar displays of power without swearing, which is a very good point, because some vulgarity isn't mediated by language. Very good point. Thanks for that, Orbs. Let's go to Port Elizabeth. Rita, good morning and welcome to this conversation.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on, Eusebius. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Rita. What are your reflections around you know, notions of vulgarity or offensive art?
Well, what I'd like to say, first of all, is that I'm not coming from an art background at all. I'm a consumer of art from completely outside of the artistic world. I suppose, and I don't find swearing vulgar. I don't find many forms of language to be vulgar. I'm not easily offended. So I'm quite left when it comes to that. But I think in terms of some of the things that many people find vulgar, talking about the human form, often there's forms of nakedness, or as I said before, if they're portraying lovemaking between someone that's not heteronormative and the choice of partner, people call that vulgar. And as a woman, I think the point I'd like to make is many times we call these portrayals of naked women vulgar, are doing what is outside of the bounds of the patriarchy. So art that depicts a naked woman as pretty and sensual and lying in repose, that's okay for many people. But art that shows a woman as angry and out there and showing her sexuality and maybe her legs wide open, to people that's vulgar. But to me, that's because it goes against this patriarchal theme that we have in society that continues to try and put women, especially, and tell them they must behave. Girls shouldn't swear. That's not polite. They should be quiet and pretty.
Absolutely. Some beautiful thoughts there, Rita, especially about power wanting to reproduce itself through policing sensibility. We're going to come back to that thought in a second. I just want to take a second caller first. Oliver, thank you so much for calling in Randfontein.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm very good, thanks.
I'm well, thanks. Listen, I want to go back to what one of your guests just said earlier, that in South Africa, specifically South African media, we are subjected to performative vulgarity on the daily. I remember during at the height of the protest, xenophobic attacks. We saw a very iconic picture of Emmanuel Sithole being butchered to death, the Zimbabwean national who was being stabbed right into his neck. It was a very famous picture. It circulated on social media for a very long time, and it became the snapshot for most news publications when they reported on xenophobia, and that's a really vulgar picture. I could not imagine being someone's that particular gentleman's family having to see that picture every day. That's incredibly vulgar. But as soon as it comes to language, we have this weird moral code about vulgarity and the sort of tone policing that happens around that. But as far as language is concerned, I don't think there is actually a concept of vulgarity. I think what we have is tone policing by those who hold social capital and those sort of things. So what I think for the most part is that if you go out and say, I think the only thing in public space that should be perhaps sanctioned is speech acts that that is a direct attack on the humanity of other people, right? And I don't think we have any of that in South Africa, except to say when maybe white people feel comfortable enough to go around Melville calling other black people kafirs and these sort of things, right? Those things, I think, ought to be sanctioned. But things like all men are trash, F-U-C-K, white people, those things aren't a direct attack on the humanity of the people it's directed towards, because at no point is F-U-C-K, white people, an attack on the humanity of white people with what social capital, right? So I don't think that's vulgar at all. I think whoever opposes that is just tone policing based on some really weird, okay, conservative conceptualization of what's polite and what's impolite. But also the weirdest thing about this tone policing is that it itself is an attack on the humanity of people, because it says to people, this is how you're allowed to express your anger and this is how you're not allowed to express your anger. Like, screw you, bro. That's my anger. Allow me to express it in the best possible way I deem fit.
Yeah. Okay, Oliver, there's so much you've said there. We're going to unpack it on the other side of news headlines. Lots of fascinating insights. Thank you for that. By the way, just as a parting shot, it's interesting that you are happy to perform for purpose of the discussion the K word, but not the F bomb. Okay, we've lost Alistair there.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's going to send me a message. It's interesting there about the moral gradations of these words, right?
Yeah,
you are safe anyway. You can't be taken to some Broadcasting Complaints Commission because you're not performing the word to offend or to denigrate. You are pointing to it in order to discuss it. I always thought that's my safe when I say these words on end. People go, did you say that? And Oliver was comfortable to say the K word, but not the F bomb.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
25 minutes before 11, we're talking about vulgarity and notions of offensiveness, particularly when it comes to art in terms of our public discourse. Have your say on 011-883-0702 in Jersey and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Two fantastic calls there. Let's take them each in turn. I like how Rita talked about how, again, some people's use of the idea of that's vulgar is really to protect their own power or because they are scared that, you know, if you're a misogynist, the idea of women not being policed by you is something that will touch you on your studio.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea for me, that whoever is in power determines what sort of standards of language there is. But, you know, we were talking off air about the multiple, you know, identities that are in South Africa that are often, you know, hidden or off view because the standard language of communication in public is English, and language carries values. You know, you know what is important to a culture because of the words and the tone that is in that culture's language. So that if you go if you're in Buchabelo or in Bloemfontein, you know, people will call such and such of your mothers, you know, in polite conversation, you know, and if you're not part of that circle or part of that, you know, locale, you'll find that, you know, the language of that space very vulgar, and people use very, you know, what we consider swear words, you know, all willy-nilly, you know.
That's a very important point, and that's why I was very happy when my producer said that you wanted to talk about vulgarity in particular, Percy, beyond art. I was listening to Radio 2000 cricket commentary the other day, and there was a match on in PE. And one of the commentators, I wish I could have recorded it so I can tour him afterwards, were disgusted by the brass band from the northern suburbs, which is a bunch of coloured people going there. Because for him, that is vulgar. You don't go to a cricket match and that's something that you do.
Yeah.
I've had on this platform, or how you will remember when we talked about whether there's norms of decency and how you engage in an art gallery, people who think that, you know, you shouldn't make too much noise as you go from one painting to the next. You're going to be dead, dead quiet.
Exactly.
So there definitely
And there's a particular cultural bias to that. You know,
are we just really bad at recognizing that our norms don't universalize?
I mean, we have to.
Are we all prone to that?
I'd say. Well, at least for the black body, is, I mean, historically, presently, vulgar. Now you talk about a black female body, it's even worse. So before you even open your mouth, you might be the most polite person, but your presence as a black body, I mean, in the world as currently formulated, is vulgar. So dare you go and say something that is challenging or even swear, then it's even extra.
You know, you confirm that you are less than.
Exactly.
That's true,
exactly.
Even Idris Elba, not good enough to be Bond.
I mean, that would have been the most vulgar thing.
Just evolve.
You know, to that idea. Yeah. Look, I mean, one of the things we need to come to terms with the fact that there's more than one value system at work in this country. right? And that is very important. You know, what Mbeki called the two economies at one point, I suppose there's multiple economies of you know, of values, as it were. And I think once we start to understand that, you know, what is considered acceptable, you know, as far as public discourse and language in Mdantsane might not be in Mafikeng or might not be in Pretoria or Sandton, right? And that means that there are, you know, values at play. However, there is this one value that everybody, you know, seems to think, or many people seem to think is acceptable, and often it's a value sensibility that is attached to the language of English, and I think that's a function of our history.
Yeah, it's okay, but sorry, Lwandle, go ahead, because I wanted us to also get to Oliver's call. But we'll get there in a second.
Just, and that's just an important call.
Absolutely.
Because I was thinking about this, that what you're saying, that we have this sort of like a plurality, right?
Of values.
Of values. And what has happened in this country, that there's aspired to value, right, is whiteness. So we have to assimilate. And to assimilate, then you have to kind of cut your tongue.
Clean yourself up.
Yeah. You know, whiten yourself, as it were. Yeah. You know, in order to navigate South Africa, in order to survive. It's a survival mechanism, you know.
In the US, they talk about, you know, the language you speak with your friends and the language you speak for interview. All right. So there's the English that I speak for interview, and then when I'm with my boys, you know, I speak.
What does that do to you as a writer, as an artist, as a critic?
Precisely.
Is this like you coming even onto this platform? Is there a version of this conversation between the three of us that would sound very different if we were even just hanging out at Doppio Zero?
I think that would be, we're mindful of who's listening.
So who are we performing for?
Whoever
in a country that's majority black. Even
exactly,
our listeners are majority
exactly.
black.
Exactly. You know, just like Jacob Zuma is most, you know, powerful when he's speaking Zulu, right? So, but I have this idea that we assume a particular listener, a particular master ear that we must perform for, and that we think that, you know, will accept and not punish, you know, a particular type of social behavior, especially when you work in the media.
So what, amongst the many things that Oliver said that fascinates me and moves us into the next issue I wanted us to dig into, is if we accept that, yes, there's tone policing, we know that it's less about recognizing bad art than it is about protecting my own comfort zone and my own privileges as the person who now polices tone. I think Oliver unpacked that very nicely. But here's my question to you guys, right? I mean, you write about this kind of stuff. Does that mean there are no evaluative standards for talking about art at all, Percy?
No, there is.
Can you say this is good art
and this is bad art?
Yeah,
this
is certainly great art, this is not art.
Certainly. Yeah.
Would you even be prepared beyond good and bad to be able to say this is offensive art? Is that part of your vocabulary?
Yeah, look, offensive, whether you know, offensive for me is
Dean Hutton's artwork, for example.
I think she does well to offend. I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with being offensive.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes offense...
They do well, by the way. Yeah,
you know, I think offense is a very necessary element in public discourse, right, in order to draw us towards particular conversation about what is not acceptable or what is acceptable, so that by wearing that, you know, that jumpsuits, you know, F white people, Dean Hutton is symbolically performing a need for a particular evaluation of, you know, she herself as a white bodied, you know, a person is calling us to a conversation around white people's attitude towards whiteness, right?
Robert disagrees with you. Robert says, I don't agree. The F white people actually degrades white people's personhood. I mean, you know, so what do you say to someone like that who thinks that there's moral and aesthetic deficiency in Dean's work?
By the way,
it's very difficult language.
We leave it to them.
I mean about Dean. Dean is gender non-conforming, so that's, you know, we've got to be careful. Dean refers to themselves in the plural pronoun. Mm. So some people will say that Dean Hutton's work, Lwandile, is not particularly complex and interesting from an aesthetic point of view.
I mean, I wanted to say that the aesthetic question is one of the many questions that we approach art with. And to give it primacy, you know, at the expense of the others is to do ourselves a disservice. Okay. Go on.
Fair enough.
I was going to say that, I mean, obviously, to a white person, F-white people would be offensive. And it, and this is even before, I mean, we can be disingenuous here and talk about sort of aesthetic consideration as if that matters. What matters is what she's, it's written. It's what Din has written, which is F-white people. Right. And what and what people don't get is that with sort of with that kind of performance art, it's always completed by the viewer. Mm-hmm. Right. That the art in itself is not simply offensive as it is. It is offensive when that cycle is complete, when you offend it. I can look at it and say that this is could be a potentially offensive statement because it has the F bomb. But I'm not offended by it. Mm. Right. And you, so you have to have a certain positionality to be offended by it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that
you have to have stuff at stake.
You have to have stuff at stake. And white people in South Africa are used to be spoken to politely.
Yeah.
Right? And it's so nice. This is really cool about this one is that it's actually Din identifies as white, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm amongst being queer and non-gender performing.
Yes.
Which is really, really cool. Because then you couldn't point
it outside. Interestingly enough, I must say, on the open line late last year when we had a heated discussion about that, a caller that took offense having gone into that gallery, they didn't know that, and just assumed that this was the work of an angry black artist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I want to push back against this. I can't imagine you're a complete... I mean, in philosophy, you know, we talk about emotivists and about subjectivists, cultural relativists.
Yeah.
Percy, as much as you're a nice guy, I can't believe that you're a relative of this. I can't believe that you won't say that no evaluative criteria, because what Lundell is saying is that the offense is all in the eye of the art consumer.
As I was saying, there are multiple ways in which to go at it. We can sit and look at it as an art object and how it functions within the context of art history and the language of art. Right, but I think Din's artwork exists in multiple spaces. It also enters a space in a country that has a particular public discourse, so that its function goes beyond the art world. Right. Mm-hmm. And in that, then that's why we're having this question around white people, their history in the country, or whether or not white people has a discourse about their whiteness and what it means in South Africa today. Mm-hmm. Right. And Din is forcing that onto them, you know, through this artwork. And then we can talk about someone like, you know, whether or not Ayanda Mambulu can paint well while he's painting Jacob Zuma's Bill Clinton's. Right.
Godla, why are you flinching there? Ayanda right? Mambulu.
Is he
vulgar?
I think it is.
I think it is.
I mean, I like this work with only just the president, the one where he's sitting on the couch, his big chunky legs are open and his phallus is hanging, and you know,
a very generous one as well.
Yeah. But
you would regard him as vulgar, or the work?
I would regard the work. I could see how that work would potentially touch, like, the political elite in their studio, right?
Yeah.
Because what he represents, right, the state, right? Yeah. And also, I mean, within that image, you have a whole, he's like bulky and he's round. So what he represents in terms of who's eating in this country, right?
Yeah.
And what he's saying to someone else who's not eating, right?
Yeah, but I'm still a minute ago. I want to take a break, but just to be clear, we'll unpack it afterwards. Did you accidentally say that Ayanda Mapulu's work is vulgar? But you mean to say that?
No, I know that he intends the work to be vulgar. It's not vulgar to me, right? I don't look at it and feel offended personally, right? Okay. But he intends the work to be vulgar. I mean, he said this.
It's a swear word in paint form.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let's take a break. After this break, we'll deconstruct Ayanda Mambulu and also that, how shall one call it? Ostentatious display of Zuma's manhood.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Yeah, we've only got about 10 minutes left, so let's try and squeeze in as much conversation as possible. A lot of your tweets I can't even get to. Rico says, when the words hanging phallus is heard on morning radio. And Tund also says, art gets value based on whoever appreciates it. If no one appreciates it, then surely it's worthless. Offense is a very subjective notion. Siki makes the very important observation. This is interesting, Eusebius. People walk out of church and people walk out of galleries when they tend to be offended. So these are just the way in which discourse plays out. Okay, let's just discuss a little bit more Ayanda Mambulu. I mean, I think Ayanda probably wouldn't find it, you know, a diss if someone said, dude,
you're vulgar.
You are vulgar.
Because that's
not even your work. You are vulgar.
I love Ayanda's work. Let me put it out there. You know, I think he's one of our more enjoyable painters. you know, of our generation. You know, I mean, he pushes the envelope harder than most.
The paintbrush is
the yeah, you know, or the paintbrush. And I enjoy, you know, how he handles paint. He doesn't always get the, you know, get it right. And I think what people who hate Ayanda's work often hate, you know, what he represents. And I think the most important part, you know, element of the meaning of Ayanda Mabulu is that he represents a black youth's rejection of a particular idea that has to do with how young black people have always held our leaders, you know, to reverence without question. And he comes along and says, no, you are not my father, you know. And I mean that in that open sense, that to publicly perform a rejection of your elder, just as black people not voting ANC, as it were. That's what, you know, he represents that in the most artistically possible way. And I think that his images remind people of that. So when the ANC marches to Goodman Gallery, that's what they're marching against, not the painting. But, you know, they're marching against this idea that a young, you know, black male is rejecting this part
I agree with you guys on this, and it's because I've got very liberal conceptions about the role of the artist, maximum freedom to offend, to engage society, and to do so without fear or favor to anyone who benefits from the different kinds of power structures. But in the time that's left, I wonder when we look at, say, Jackson Mutembu having one of his lowest moments in his political career. Don't buy City Press, don't buy.
Yeah.
Trying to get rid of, you know, the spear painting, people chucking stuff at it. The same happening in Cape Town now, trying to quite frankly, get rid of artwork that offends. Do we have a problem in this country with low levels of artistic literacy?
Visual literacy,
Or to be fair on the proverbial masses, should one understand as just part of contestation in society that when someone wants to get rid of a painting and have it, just chucked on a bonfire, it's not necessarily because they are illiterate, but because it's also just part of contestation. So maybe we should also give some texture and complexity to these battles.
Look, I mean, there's nothing wrong with burning a painting, you know, in just as like, you know, vulgar performances of your
disapproval,
of your disapproval, you know, it's necessary part of our tools of language, you know. What I've always found interesting, and we said this over, is that, you know, majority of the people who are complaining about particular artworks haven't been to an art gallery in the last 3 years. You know, and, you know, I can hazard that assumption, you know, precisely because, you know, the numbers of people who go to galleries.
Okay, even so despite me trying to be nice, we do have a artistic literacy problem.
We have a visual literacy problem.
A visual literacy.
We have a visual
what
literacy.
What does that mean in plain English?
No, I mean, like, the idea that we don't read images well, you know, let alone normal literacy, you know, in terms of language and alphabet on the paper.
How many people do read,
right? So as far as it comes to pictures, people don't read, don't have the tools. We're not taught.
Because some people who were pissed off about the spear painting, Lwandile, weren't necessarily Zuma fans, but they thought, this goes against culture. I really don't want to be rude, but sometimes people who were trying to defend him against that representation don't even get the meaning of art as representation. Some people were so cheesed off, they were behaving as if, you know, this was someone who had jumped into his bedroom and took a picture and put it on display.
Yeah. Look, I mean, one of the things that we had to, as far as the spear was concerned, is that my contest with the spear was not as an artwork, but it's propositions, right? And the history of the representation of the male black body by white male painters or white male players in culture. That was my contest. Not the fact that the artist Brett Murray had the right to paint Zuma in that way. That for me was not even part of the question. The question was, okay, he's made a proposition. Let me contest this. Let's have a debate, Brett Murray. Is it a valid point to make?
But Lonzo, I want to bring you in here because you're pointing to the hypocrisy of polite society. But we also have hypocrisies here. Suddenly, we are prepared to say, you know, if I don't like Zuma, then Brett Murray is saying something interesting. Let's debate the content of his messaging. But if I don't like
Claudi,
you know, if I don't like, let's say, Zapiro, then I don't want to have a discussion about the content of a cartoon that depicts Sean Abrams as a monkey that is being controlled by Jay-Z. I just want to talk about how this man obviously doesn't understand the limits of artistic freedom. So we see complexity where we don't have interest. Yeah. And where we do have interest, we also don't want to see complexity.
Yeah. We are a very conservative society. Because you have in South Africa sort of the political class represented by the likes of Zuma, and then you have obviously the sort of conservative Afrikaner kind of like people who
the
are
money
also,
people,
you know, and then you also have even amongst, say, if we talk about like the sort of working class, that you have a kind of traditionalist, right, conservative. So that that painting particularly was linked to tradition and culture,
yeah,
specifically, right? It offends now my culture, my tradition. So we have all these different sort of like conservative states working at the same time. Yeah. And there's only a handful of people who can claim any kind of like openness, sort of being liberal, being able to hold different ideas at the same time.
But this speaks to these levels of societies that exist in one country. So to a particular cultural sensibility, you know, it was offensive. To a particular Christian national sensibility, it was offensive. But to a particular liberal, you know, reader, it was fine and acceptable. And to those also who may belong to all the group that is otherwise offended, but who happen to hate Zuma personally, were not offended. Yeah. Right. So there is these multiple interests that come to play on the issue. I mean, this be a question. Was very interesting, I think Paulo Jordan, who we miss in our public discourse very dearly, made a very interesting point that there was this girl in Cape Town in Rondebosch there who had just bought a car. Her name was Naziwe, right? And of course, in Xhosa, when you are Vuyiswa, you become Vuyi. When you are Tabisa, you become Tabo. When you are Naziwe, you become Nazi, right? So she puts Nazi on her number plate as a personalized. As a personalized number plate, she drives around the Jewish neighborhood. Everybody's pissed off. You know, why you want to drive around here saying you are Nazi in a Jewish neighborhood? But she was celebrating, you know, a moment where she just bought a car and whatnot. So there's multiple interests and readings and backgrounds that come to bear as, you know, on particular artworks. It's very interesting.
Personal Wanderle, thank you so much for your insights, your incisiveness. I hope we have you on the show more often and love your work and continue doing great things.
Thanks for having us.